Your favorite Voice America Talk Radio Network shows and hosts are in your car, outdoors, and wherever you need them to be. Listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Sports Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericasports.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
No, he didn't slam you, he didn't bump you, he didn't nudge you, he rubbed you. And rubbing, son, is racing.
Gentlemen, start your engines.
This is Pit Pass USA, the fastest auto racing location on the internet, with the latest news, the best interviews, and our own brand of commentary. Here's your host, Larry Henry.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining us again on another edition of Pit Pass USA. Hopefully you've had a great week and had a great weekend last weekend. This weekend, all sorts of things going on in the racing world. I love this time of year. College football is underway. The NFL is underway. And racing is getting down to the nitty-gritty. NHRA is beginning their countdown to one. They're in Charlotte at Z-Max Dragway. Of course, NASCAR getting ready to start their chase. 10 races to go. We'll talk to Dustin Long about that in just a moment. IndyCar, they're getting down to the end. They're over in Motegi, Japan to run the road course. We'll talk to Will Power, who's second in points a little later on there. Grand Am Rolex Series wrapping up their season this week in Mid-Ohio. Seems a little early, but they're doing that at Mid-Ohio. And the American Le Mans Series, and I'll be with them, is headed out to Mazda Raceway at Laguna Seca this weekend for a six-hour race, and that should be exciting. We'll talk to Adrian Fernandez, who is going to be with us this weekend as the Aston Martin Racing Team, the factory team, comes over to run at Mazda Raceway, and always look forward to seeing Adrian. We will talk to him a little later in the program. This weekend, the 2011 NASCAR Chase for the Sprint Cup gets underway at Chicagoland Speedway. And joining me now to talk all about that and kind of handicap the field is Dustin Long, the writer for Landmark Newspapers, the Virginian Pilot in Norfolk, Roanoke Times, and the News and Record in Greensboro, North Carolina. Dustin, welcome. Well, we've spent all season getting here, and now it's time for the real fun to begin.
Well, it certainly has been a lot of fun this year with all the different winners, what, 15 different winners, 5 first-time winners, and some of the feuds that have been out there. So, you know, if fans have enjoyed the first 26 races of the season, you know, the next 10 could be quite a show.
Is the chase, though, going to live up to what we've seen during the regular season? Because it has been exciting. One, the wild card factored in, the feuds, the racing, the different winners, the surprise winners starting back at Daytona. It's been a great season to date.
You know, it has been from the fan perspective, and you know, you'd think it'd be hard to top, but yet as the season progresses, you know, things keep happening to make, you know, make you as the fan say, wow, this is you know, unreal what's happening here. And I think what's going to be fascinating, you know, one of the things that really intrigues me about this is as you go down the chase, the next to last race of the season is Phoenix. Well, they've repaved and reconfigured that track a bit. And while they'll be, you know, they've had a good year tire test there, there'll be an open test for everybody a year later on. But essentially, your next to last race of the chase is going to be, you know, what some guys are saying is a bigger wild card than Talladega, because you've got this new surface, the track's, you know, reconfigured a bit with the dog leg, that it's really going to, you know, the notes before for all these teams aren't going to matter. So, you know, guys are really going to have to, you know, just kind of do things on the spur of the moment. So that's going to be fascinating to watch. And with this point system that's intended to kind of keep things close, if you've got, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 guys, you know, within a reasonable amount of points, Phoenix could be really the race that really shakes things up, even more so than a Talladega, which, you know, everybody always looks at Talladega as the true wild card.
Yeah, because you could get 1 point, or you could get the maximum points at Talladega and not be your own fault, which is the biggie there, because you get behind by 40-some points, you're probably in trouble, although, as you mentioned, Phoenix could even it out. When I look at the chase this year, I really have trouble coming up with a favorite. Okay, until somebody beats Jimmy Johnson, Jimmy Johnson's the man to beat. But when you look down through the field, any one of these guys have a very legitimate chance at this thing.
Well, I mean, here to point it out is so far they've run on 8 of the 10 tracks that they'll race in the Chase. They've not run at Chicago, where they'll be this weekend, and they've not run at Homestead this season, which is the season finale. So if you look at how all the Chase guys have done at the 8 other tracks this season, the guy with the best finishing average is Dale Earnhardt Jr. He has a 7.6 average finish at the 8 Chase tracks this year. Now, people are going to be like, you know, everybody's discounting Dale Jr. because he has stumbled into the Chase, and certainly, you know, a lot of his numbers were posted here earlier in the season, but, you know, that's how mixed up and crazy it can be. And then the one thing I'd caution people about is when you look back in recent years, I think it's like 3 of the last 4 years, a driver in the Chase who had not won in the first 26 races went out and won the first Chase race. And that was when it was at New Hampshire. Now you've got in Chicago, a mile and a half, so a little bit different setting. But, you know, I know a few years back, Greg Biffle won the first 2 races, really put himself in position, first 2 races in the Chase, even though he had won before in the regular season, put himself in position and went on to finish 3rd and challenge for the title. So, you know, there's the possibility that, you know, while most people are talking about Jeff Gordon and Jimmy Johnson, Kyle Busch, maybe Carl Edwards, possibly Kevin Harvick, you know, there's a few other guys that might come up and sneak up and be a factor too.
Well, one of those could be Denny Hamlin. I mean, he is trying to make up for what happened to him last year. You start with the disaster at Phoenix that led into the poor qualifying at Homestead, that led into a poor finish at Homestead that put him out of the contention to take Jimmy Johnson and take the title away from him. I mean, they are very capable of starting on a roll here now that we're in the Chase.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the biggest question you have with the Gibbs teams, which would be Hamlin and Kyle Busch, is the reliability of the equipment. Certainly there's been engine issues for all 3 teams with Kyle and Denny and Joey Logano throughout the season. Will that continue? Certainly mechanical issues have been the really big bugaboo for Kyle Busch in previous years in the Chase. I mean, we've seen many years where he's been super strong during the regular season, goes into the Chase, and they have all sorts of issues. I mean, so certainly, you know, Kyle probably gets an unfair amount of blame for that. I mean, I think people certainly question, you know, we'll look at that and question his mental aptitude, you know, or his mental toughness going into the Chase. But there have been times, you know, you can't do anything if pieces on your car break, and that's what's happened to him at times too. So I think what will be interesting is to see how Kyle Busch's team does the first couple races. Can they get through without issues? If so, they're a contender. If not, it's the same problem as before. Again, that's the same thing with Denny Hamlin's going to face. I mean, you know, what's the reliability of that, of the equipment? And can they get through the first few races? You know, they've been up and down. They just have not shown as much speed as like Jeff Gordon, Jimmy Johnson, a couple others. So, you know, speed is certainly a key element, but that's just only part of the pie that goes into the equation for a championship.
Talking with Dustin Long from Landmark Newspapers, who covers NASCAR for the Virginian Pilot in Norfolk, Roanoke Times, and the News and Record of Greensboro, North Carolina. Dustin, I'm a little partial to Brad Keselowski, who won his way into the Chase by taking 3 races, had just an incredible run. Can he continue this? Is he the guy that he's driven that maybe suddenly, I mean, the Blue Deuce is the team? Again, I'm partial because I know him. I know his mom and dad. I know his brother, and he's from Michigan.
Well, I mean, what he has done here lately has been remarkable with the streak the last 6 races or so to get into the Chase and just, you know, put himself in a good position. The one thing that hurts him, obviously, is he's a wild card, so he didn't get those bonus points for the 3 wins. That would have given him 9 more points, and, you know, who knows? You know, at the end of the day, is nine points going to be a factor? If it is, you certainly hate it for Brad, but he had his opportunities. You know, can they continue to be hot and to do what they've done all through the Chase? You're asking them, you know, they've done it for essentially the last 6 races. Now they have to do it for the next 10. So you're asking them to be that strong and solid for 16 races. I mean, we're talking about half a season. That's a lot to ask for a team. There's no doubt about that. If they do it, hey, they certainly deserve the championship because they will have truly earned it. You know, Brad was on a conference call with reporters the other day and said, you know, look, experience, he was asked about experience in the Chase because he's the only guy who's new to the Chase. He says, look, experience is probably going to matter. It's just how much is it going to matter? He's like, you know, Paul Wolf, my crew chief, and I, we haven't been in the Chase before. We don't know what to expect. Maybe that's a good thing because we're going to do our own thing and we're not going to worry about everything else. And, And sometimes it's good not to know what you're getting yourself into. And that may be Brad Keselowski's biggest advantage, that could lead him to a championship.
Well, let's talk about Mr. Five-Time, Jimmy Johnson. It's not been a stellar season. I mean, he's sixth in points going in. He's only 9 points out of the lead. He got only one win this year, but he did have 17 top tens. Do they do what they always do? Suddenly we get to the final 10 and magic happens?
Well, I think that's going to be what's interesting to see. I mean, I think, you know, one of the key questions is you know, how does he and Kurt Busch race each other? And I think, you know, people have been asking about that. I think they're going to race each other hard. Certainly they've got some issues between them, but I think at least early in the chase, they're going to understand they can't do anything crazy because it could affect both their championships. I mean, you know, if one guy's going to spin out the other guy, you know, if he gets collected, then he's ruined it for himself too. And with everybody saying they feel like with this point system, you really get hurt more with a poor finish. I think, you know, Jimmy and Kurt are going to be on their best behavior around each other. It doesn't mean they're not going to race each other really hard, that they will. I think it'll be clean. I think one thing that's interesting about Johnson's team is that he's starting to put together the strong runs. Obviously the issues at Richmond with Kurt, you know, changed that a little bit, but he had three top five runs before then. He's starting to lead laps. He's getting back up at the front. You know, he's certainly a threat. That being the fact, being a point, you know, some people will point to a couple of things and say, this isn't going to be Jimmy Johnson's year. They look at the Atlanta race a couple of weeks ago and say, look, Jimmy Johnson used to win those races where he'd come racing up and pass somebody at the end of the race and win the race. And this time Jeff Gordon held him off and he couldn't get by his teammate and couldn't beat him. So that they feel like that's a sign. Some people still question the pit crew. There have been issues with Johnson's pit crew this year. Certainly Chad Knaus has been doing some different things there, and trying to build that unit. It's had some successes. It's had some disappointments at times. Can that pit crew be consistent enough? And certainly, you know, the battle with Kurt Busch is Kurt Busch in Jimmy Johnson's head or what have you? I mean, you know, how are they going to race each other and how does that impact each other? So I think there's some interesting things there. But Jimmy's also said, look, you get in the chase, it's so totally different and you really have to be strong mentally. And that's something that Brad Keselowski has said, is that he says the Johnson's team is probably the strongest team mentally in the sport. He says, you know, I'm not going to attack them that way. I'm going to go after their weaknesses, you know, and I'm going to go attack them that way. So I think there's a lot of things with Jimmy. I think he's going to be really interesting to watch to see, you know, how he comes out, how he responds, and how the pit crew and how that team moves forward.
Dustin, what's your outlook on Chicagoland? Can you pick someone that's going to win it? It used to be Roush Fenway, mile and a half. Just give it to him, but that's not been the case. So who takes home win number one in the chase?
Well, I'll tell you what. You know, I still like the Roush Fenway cars. I mean, I think they're still really strong on the mile and a half. Obviously, Jeff Gordon won the most recent mile and a half at Atlanta, and Jimmy Johnson was right up there. But you know what? I think a guy that people aren't paying as much attention to, and a guy that I kind of just keeps crawling up when I look at some of the contenders is Matt Kenseth. And obviously Carl Edwards has done some good stuff this year and has been strong a mile and a half. Kenseth finished ninth at Atlanta, led 64 laps. You know, he had a sixth place finish at Kentucky, a couple top tens in the last, you know, recent mile and a half. He's a guy. Now, I'm not sure if he's got the speed, the challenge that Gordon and Johnson have shown so far. But, you know, sometimes it always isn't the fastest car that wins. It's the guy that's the best on pit road, may not be as fast on the track, but can take advantage of certain situations. And Kenseth is a guy that I'm just, you know, he's just, I think everybody's overlooking him. And I think that's a guy that certainly has a very good chance, and I wouldn't be surprised if he won Sunday at Chicago.
And I wouldn't be surprised if he won the championship, too. He just quietly lays there in the weeds, and then suddenly at the end you go, where'd he come from? And that's kind of his M.O. Well, Dustin, I want to thank you for talking with us today, and have fun at Chicago. And let's just hope it's as exciting for these final 10 as they were in the first 26.
Well, if it is, it'll be quite a show, that's for sure.
That's Dustin Long, Landmark Newspapers. And, yeah, if the Chase might finally live up to its billing with the new points, a couple of new faces, and just the way it's been this year, and it is hard to pick a favorite, but Jimmy Johnson seems to have a way of doing it somehow. And until someone is the champion, when all is said and done at Homestead Miami Speedway, he is the man to beat. Speaking of the man to beat, over in IndyCar, it's been Dario Franchitti, but Will Power's closing in. He's only 5 points behind going to Motegi, Japan this weekend. We'll catch up with the Penske driver next when we return to Pit Pass USA, part of the Power Motorsports Series on VoiceAmericaSports.com.
Your internet flagship station for sports.
Voice America Sports.
When it comes to youth and high school football, listen each week to Coach Al Gross at First and Ten Football. Coach covers vital topics relating to the latest trend on a national level. Join Coach as he interviews personalities from the NFL, NCAA, and the top high school coaches from around the country. Catch all the interviews and get in-depth information online at www.firstandtenfootball.com. Your national resource for youth and high school football. First and Ten Football airs Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Sports.
What if there was a program that brought the best in sports and the best of entertainment together in one place? It can be done, and Darnell Autry proves it every week on Outside the Spotlight. In this program, athletes and artists come together to share their success stories, hobbies, professional projects, and more that will interest not only the sports fan, but fans of entertainment and other human interest stories. If you have something you want to ask your favorite athlete or entertainer, listen for Outside the Spotlight, Fridays at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, on Voice America Sports.
The revolution has begun with Jim and Trav.
Listen this week as Randall Eaton, Shannon Young, Josh Fleming, and Joe Hosmer tell us why it's important to get our kids in the outdoors. Plus, Cat Daddy will have some catfishy tips, and Nick Rhodes has a new twist on wildlife management you'll want to hear. This is sponsored by Ram Trucks at RamTrucks.com. Wednesdays at 1 Pacific on the Voice America Sports Channel. I'm Jim Ferguson. I'll see you on the trail.
Your internet flagship station for sports.
Voice America Sports.
You're listening to Pit Pass USA with Larry Henry. To leave comments or suggest future guests for the show, email us at LarryHenry@PitPassUSA.com. That's LarryHenry@PitPassUSA.com. Now, back to more of the fastest show in motorsports, Pit Pass USA with Larry Henry.
The 2011 IndyCar season is beginning to wind down. Three races remain, and once again, a great battle for the championship between Dario Franchitti and my next guest, who wound up the winner of the inaugural Baltimore Grand Prix, and that is Will Powers, only 5 points out of the top spot. Will, congratulations on taking the big win at Baltimore and making this battle for the championship a hot one again like it was last year.
Yeah, that was a great race. That was a championship run, I would say. The close within 5 points, and I just enjoyed the race altogether, the track and you know, the massive crowd they had. It was a lot of fun.
What was it like learning that track? Obviously, less practice time on Friday than everybody would want to have because of still working on the track. They had a hurricane. They had an earthquake the week before. That threw them behind a little bit. But once everybody got out there and started racing, it seemed like everybody was raving about the track because it was tricky. It was bumpy, but it challenged everyone.
It was. It was very technical. It was, you know, a lot of corners leading to other complexes of corners, so you had to be really smart about how you tackled it. But, you know, all in all, I think everyone was happy with the track layout. They're already looking at improvements for next year, just the whole atmosphere altogether.
Well, it was an incredible atmosphere, and I've been to races all over the world, in Brazil and Australia and Japan and Long Beach, and the crowds were just immense. What was it like from a driver's viewpoint with all the people? The paddocks were packed for the weekend.
I think everyone was really surprised and happy to see such a big crowd. They're all having fun too, you know. There's a lot of things to do there, and you know, they're all enjoying. They all knew all the drivers' names, so it was, you know, an educated crowd about motorsport. So I think it was a real success, and you know, everyone in the IndyCar fraternity thought, you know, man, we got to keep coming back here.
Well, it was also a very great weekend for you. As we mentioned, you got the win. You pulled it within 5 points of Dario Franchitti with three races to go, and you've got some momentum. You've had a couple of good runs back to back now.
Yeah, we have. You know, we just had basically two perfect weekends. And you know, that's, you know, we have the car, we have the crew and the team to do that week in, week out. There's just been, you know, certain things that haven't gone our way this year, which is pretty normal for a season. So, you know, we're not, honestly, wasn't even really thinking about a championship. I was just having fun and going for it, you know, nothing to lose really.
Well, also the team kind of bounced back after Indianapolis. It was a very un-Penske-like month of May, just to put it bluntly. And everyone was scratching their head what was going on. There was a couple of weeks where it looked like all the Penske cars were struggling. And now, in fact, all three of your cars seem to be running a lot better. Is there a reason for that?
I don't think so. I don't think we found anything, nothing magical. Just hard work and, you know, putting the whole thing together on the weekend. I think that's sort of, you know, I know there's a couple of tracks where we really struggled, like Mid-Ohio and, you know, New Hampshire. And we sat down and had a really good think about our setup philosophy. And, you know, that's really all that's changed.
Now you're headed off to Motegi, Japan for the last time for IndyCar to go there, but you're not running on the oval. You're running on the road circuit where no one has really raced before. It's almost like a Baltimore situation.
Yeah, it is. It's, I think it's a really nice road course too. So, yeah, really happy to be running there on the road course. I mean, when I went there last year, I looked and thought, man, how good would it be for IndyCar to run on that? Now we are. So I think that's going to be a lot of fun. You know, to go there and capitalize on the fact that we're on a new track again.
Well, it's also interesting. I've been to Motegi several times, and I always looked at the road course, and it's fantastic, but it has several configurations that they have there at Motegi. Have they figured out exactly, obviously they have by now, which configuration you're going to be racing?
I'm guessing it's just going to be the long track, I suppose. I think that's what it'll be. I didn't even know that there was multiple configurations.
Well, when they built that facility out in the middle of nowhere, Motegi is out in the middle. It's a fantastic facility that Honda spent about $500 million building, with the oval and the road course. There's a dirt track there, a go-kart. The Honda Museum is there. It is a fabulous, fabulous facility, but they set it up. They could run Formula One or anything. And I think it's going to be interesting to see all of you on that road course. Plus, it's right in your wheelhouse. The road courses obviously have been your strength through the years. I know you're getting tired of hearing that because you run at ovals, but with the change there, this is a great opportunity to pick up more ground and take over the lead from Dario.
It is. No matter what track you're on, you can have a good weekend or a bad weekend. And, you know, no doubt Ganassi's been really strong on some road courses, like Mid-Ohio, they're definitely stronger than us, in Toronto. So it's no saying, you know, it's not just a given that we're going to be strong or stronger than Ganassi. I mean, you know, we have to work hard, and but, you know, we just got to, I think, capitalize on the fact that it's a new track for everyone.
Time with Will Power here in Pit Pass USA. He was second in points in IndyCar and the winner of the inaugural Baltimore Grand Prix. Will, do you ever think back to last season where you were right in contention and right at the very end it slipped away from you? Does that ever slip into your mind, or is the past and you're just focused here on what's happening this season?
Pretty focused on what I'm doing right here, right now. I haven't even given it a thought, you know. I mean, I'm very looking forward, man, looking forward.
People like me, and I guess a lot of journalists probably bring it up a lot. Do you ever just say, "Hey, enough's enough," or "We're that's over," and you guys, come on, let's talk about the future?
I mean, not really. I mean, people don't continue to ask me about it. I mean, usually you want to talk about what's happening right now, not what happened 10 years ago.
Obviously so. What do you look for here? One, going to Motegi and running that, and then your final two races of the year. Do you think it's going to be like it has been? It seems like every IndyCar season coming down to the final race, and we've even seen it determined on the final turn in the past at IndyCar for the championship.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if it's not. it's motorsport. It's unpredictable. Who knows what can happen, and hopefully it is a good battle all the way to the end.
Is it fun battling Dario? for the title? Are you two getting very competitive, or do you get any anger? I mean, we always talk about that in sports. You got to have an anger against your opponent to really go out there, and especially with football season coming up.
No, there's definitely no anger towards him. it's just not even a thought, really, towards him. I mean, over a weekend, you got 27 other competitors, 27 other people you got to beat. He's just in there in the mix, so you just focus on your job at hand and get the most out of your own situation during the weekend.
I think something we sometimes forget, and all you have to do is look at Baltimore. Tony Kanaan's great run after that scary incident he had flying through the air at Baltimore to come back and finish where he did. There are a lot of cars out there that can take the win and compete up front each and every week, and I think a lot of us overlook that at times.
Well, now the series is so competitive, it's just unbelievable. I can't. It must have been like, you know, how many different teams were in the top 10 this week? It was unbelievable. You know, you had Penske, Newman Haas, KV. There's probably three other teams in there. I mean, they're all such a strong series now. So many good teams and drivers.
So it's more than Dario Franchitti that we should be concerned about, especially with you going for the title. There are a lot of guys there. You've just got to be in front of Dario each and every week.
That's the key to him here out.
Well, we're looking for an exciting time over Motegi. I think it's going to be interesting for the fans to see the cars run on the road course. And I know from the times I went there and we ran on the oval, everyone was always saying, you know, maybe we could do a split weekend. We run on the oval and the next day we run on the road course. Of course, that's kind of impossible changing cars over. I think everyone wanted to run that road course. And I think it's going to put on a great race over there. And why not with it being the last time to go to Motegi?
Yeah, exactly. I think everyone's going to have a lot of fun.
Well, Will, I want to thank you for taking time out of your schedule to talk with us. I know you're getting all the bags packed to head off to Japan, recovering from the great win in Baltimore, and we wish you the best of luck the rest of the season.
Excellent. Thanks for having me on. Thank you.
That is Will Power from Penske Racing, and again, they are running at Twin Ring Motegi, although they're not going to be twin ringing it. They are going to be running the road course. That's, of course, from the tsunami and the earthquakes that they had. They had some problems on the oval, and so they're using the road circuit. No one's ever raced on it in IndyCar before. I think it's a fantastic facility. It is in the middle of nowhere. We stayed every time I went to Mito, which is, I don't know, it was about an hour bus ride. These roads would turn into single-car roads, I mean single-lane roads. And what was really neat about Motegi is the Japanese fans would come and they would park, and if they left, they would put a rock down in their parking place, and nobody would take that parking. It was really just unbelievable. So it should be a fantastic weekend, and with that points battle between Will Power and Dario Franchitti, a very, very big race. Well, next up, we'll turn to another big race. That's the America Le Mans Series heading to Mazda Raceway, Laguna Seca, for a six-hour race this weekend on Saturday. We'll talk to Adrian Fernandez. They're going to be driving with the Aston Martin factory team this weekend. When we return to Pit Pass USA, part of the Power Motorsports Series on VoiceAmericaSports.com.
Your internet flagship station for sports.
Voice America Sports.
Sports and medicine go hand in hand. Quite simply, if you aren't up to your game health-wise, you won't be up to your game on the field. That's where Bruce the Sports Doc comes in. Dr. Bruce Grossinger uses his medical training and experience to bring you a link between sports and medicine, from the latest advances and treatments to discussion behind the injuries of the week. Bruce the Sports Doc and his team of guest experts are here each week to lay it on the line in terms that you can understand. Tune in every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific on the Voice America Sports Channel. Looking for the best show about horse racing and handicapping? Want to play the ponies? Join us every week for Winning Ponies with John Englehart, racing's regular guy, where you'll go inside and behind the scenes with the top jockeys, trainers, agents, and handicappers in the world of horse racing. This show is the perfect complement to the Winning Ponies handicapping website. Listen for top plays for the weekend and the spot play of the week, and win prizes just for calling in. Winning Ponies with John Englehart is live Thursdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific on the Voice America Sports Network.
Blitz,
are
Are you ready for an old-school, in-your-face discussion of professional, college, and high school football? Tune in for talk on a variety of football-related topics on the program From Under the Helmet with Derek Kennard.
You will hear the week's headlines and straight talk from the hosts and weekly guests that are personal and provocative.
From Under the Helmet is broadcast every Monday at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Sports Channel.
Your internet flagship station for sports.
Voice America Sports.
You're listening to Pit Pass USA with Larry Henry. To leave comments or suggest future guests for the show, email us at LarryHenry@PitPassUSA.com. That's LarryHenry@PitPassUSA.com. Now, back to more of the fastest show in motorsports, Pit Pass USA with Larry Henry.
Well, the American Le Mans Series, of course, at Monster Raceway Laguna Seca this weekend. It's a six-hour race coming up, and joining me now is a friend of mine, great racer. In fact, he was racing last weekend with the Gulf Oil liveried car for Aston Martin over in Europe. He's going to be out of Laguna Seca this weekend, and that's Adrian Fernandez. Adrian, it's going to be great seeing you, and welcome back to the States to race.
Thank you, my friend. I'm so excited. It's, you know, it's always great to be back here, especially, you know, in places where I've been racing for so long and we have so many friends and fans.
Well, you raced over in Europe last weekend, and it really wasn't a bad run for you. Give you some confidence coming in?
Yeah, I mean, the run wasn't bad. I mean, you know, we've been coming from a top year with a new car, and now we went back to that first car with Aston Martin, and, you know, we were running good. I think we should have finished sixth. Harold Prima, my teammate, had a problem with our GT3. We lost by three laps, and we end up ninth. But the run was, I mean, it was good. The car wasn't very competitive, really. And because, you know, they have changed some rules, and it's not the same as last year. But here would be different, I think, with the muscle mail car and the Mazdas and all that, and without the Peugeots and the Auris, I think we will have a great race, and I'm looking forward.
Well, that was a six-hour race you ran at Silverstone last weekend, and this is a six-hour race this weekend at Laguna. Does that help you with the time frame and the team knowing what they need to do?
Yes, it does, because, I just raced 2 days ago, and I'm here now. So it's back-to-back, one in Europe and one in California now. I think it will help us because we haven't done really much miles with the old car. And so we tested like a month ago in Barcelona. Now we had the Silverstone race, and then we had now we have Laguna Seca, and then in 2 weeks we're going to have also Petit Le Mans. So I think it puts us all in shape for all these races.
You mentioned Greg Pickett's Muscle Milk team that's been running the Aston Martin quite successfully this year. They seem to have a handle on it. How much will that help you, and how much will the team rely on maybe getting some notes from them going into Laguna this weekend?
I think it will help. The problem is that since last race, Henry, the rules have changed in terms of the height of the race car. Now the plank has to be 20 millimeters thick, and there is no compromise, no rule change at the end of the race, so you cannot touch it anymore. So the cars are running like 8-9 millimeters higher than normal. And with an Aston Martin, like our prototype that has a V12, a heavy engine, not having the car low, it has really affected the handling of the car.
Yeah, and how tough has it been this season to start out with the brand-new prototype and then finally putting it aside, going back to the older model and trying to adjust, and you're running in the ILMC, now you're coming over here for this race, and of course, as you mentioned, Petit Le Mans coming up 2 weeks after down at Road Atlanta. Has it been a very frustrating year?
Yeah, you know, I've been talking to Lowe's, our sponsor here in the United States, and about it, and yeah, it's been very frustrating. Probably one of the most frustrating year in my career, I can remember, because, you know, it was a great project, and things just did not turn out to be like they were supposed to, and we were having all kinds of problems with the engine. We could not run. I mean, every time we were going somewhere, we do five laps, six laps, and something happened, and sometimes it was terminal, and, you know, sometimes we came from a test with no laps at all, things like that. So, I mean, you know, in the old car, I probably put no more than 60 laps in all. I did more laps in the test in Barcelona than I did in the whole year with the new car, and we didn't really run it. Le Mans, we did 3 laps, and the car, both cars broke. So, wow. Yeah, it's been frustrating. You know, things happen sometimes. ProDrive is a great team. You know, Aston Martin is a great brand, and David Richard, obviously, is a very successful person in everything he's done in racing. So I'm sure, you know, they're going to come back strong next year. It's just been hard for everybody, the mechanics, everybody this year.
You've raced an awful lot in your career at Mazda Raceway Laguna Seca. Can you talk a little bit about the track? I mean, I love the place. Going and watching cars through the corkscrew. Of course, you and I remember the great move that Alex Zanardi made on Brian Earnhardt through the corkscrew in the dirt. I mean, it is such a great racetrack for drivers to go out and challenge each other.
Yes, it's a beautiful racetrack. It has a lot of history, a lot of great racing we've done here. The town of Carmel, Monterrey, I mean, the whole package is just beautiful to come here. And the racetrack, I love it. It's you know, a change of elevation, going uphill to the corkscrew and then going down. A lot of quick and tough corners. I mean, it takes a good setup and a good physical strength to be able to go around this track. And it's fascinating racing, especially when you have combining of 4 different classes in the same race with the GTs and the prototypes. It makes it for a good race.
Is this a good track for the bigger LMP1 cars?
Not really. It's tight. For our cars, it's tight. Our old Acura, you know, the LMP2 was a fantastic car for that because it was light. It was mostly handling instead of the speed. But for these cars, it's not ideal. Our car is more for type of tracks like Le Mans, El Car Lake, for example, things like that, just fastest tracks.
Is this a track where maybe a GT car somehow, you know, I mean, there's a lot of competition in LMP1, some very good competition, but with some of the nimble corners there and the weight differential, that a GT car could surprise somebody?
No, not to that point, but because the difference is quite big. But it definitely, you know, the LMP2, for example, can be different in that respect, or LMPC. But still, we have enough power on the straight to make the difference. It's just the car, you know, you need a lot of aero, and basically our car has the most aero we can put on, and still not enough for this type of track. But still, it's fantastic fun to drive it. I mean, it's obviously you drive the car to its limit, and whatever it gives you, you know, you take. But doesn't have the handle that, for example, an LMP2 used to have.
How big of a challenge is this six-hour race? Because we're going to start in the daylight. It'll be dusk when we get to end. It's going to be cool this weekend. I think the temperature is going to be around 60. So, you know, I always talk about grip levels and engines running well in cool temperatures. It's going to be cool to begin with and cool off a little more. Does that help the race cars with the grip and the horsepower?
It makes it very difficult. Remember 2 years ago, I think, or 3 years ago, I had with Gilles de Ferran. He was in his LMP1, and I was with the LMP2, and I was rather on his body. He couldn't warm the tires at night and all that, and I think we will have these problems, and it's challenging.
And the other challenge is that a lot of people don't pay attention to it is the sand. There is sand, of course, all around the racetrack, and you go off course, you're going to run into sand. The winds can blow it on the racetrack. Cars can blow it on the racetrack, and you lose traction. How much of a problem is that we don't even think about a lot of times?
Wow. Yeah, exactly. And that, you know, at night you have a yellow flag, and you have to slow down. Tires get cold very quickly, then you get the sand. Then it makes it very tricky for the restarts. I mean, it's so easy to make mistakes. You really need to be on top of it. So that's what makes it even more interesting for the fans, really.
I know you've been visiting a lot of media people today, the big Spanish audience out there. How has that gone? Is there a lot of interest now? You've always been great at doing this and translating to the Hispanic audience out there. What's it been like for you today making the rounds out in California?
It's been great. I mean, I just landed yesterday in Miami from Europe. Came here this morning. Been in different stations here in San Francisco. We're driving now to San Jose. Then we have another interview in Monterrey. But it's always great. It's you know, it's people I know through the years in different stations, radio stations, TV stations. And it's great. It's you know, Latin people have always been very passionate about our racing, and it's just good to be there with them.
Yeah, we're looking for a great weekend. I think it's going to be absolutely fabulous, and I think it's going to be a great weekend, too, to see you again. I hate to think how many races I've watched you run in personally over the years, but it's going to be great to see you in this Aston Martin this weekend and see what you can do. And hopefully this will be a weekend where things go right for you. I know, as we talked about early, it's been frustrating for you, and as always, you've kept a good attitude about it. But I'm sure it would be great to have a podium finish or maybe be on the top step of the podium this weekend.
I think it's possible. We have great teammates and a good team, and I think it's possible this weekend for sure.
Well, Adrian, I want to thank you. I know you're busy and you're on your way to some other interviews here this afternoon and this evening. Again, thanks for talking with us, and I'll stop by and say hello. Looking forward to seeing your smiling face tomorrow afternoon.
Okay, my friend. I'll see you there. Take care and say hello to everybody.
That is Adrian Fernandez, going to be riding with Aston Martin in the America Le Mans Series. They're coming over with the factory team this weekend for the 6 hours out of Monster Raceway Laguna Seca on Saturday afternoon. And I've known Adrian for a long, long time, one of the great guys, and we'll see how it goes. It's going to be a thrilling weekend out there. Well, next up, we're going to play part of an interview I did with one of the true legends of American motorsports in so many, many different ways. Driver, builder, team owner, you name it, he has done it. Dan Gurney. We'll talk to him when we return to Pit Pass USA, part of the Power Up Motorsports Series on VoiceAmericaSports.com.
School to the pros, we cover everything. Let your voice be heard. Voice America Sports.
Spin It with Chuck Foreman has a spin on so much that's going on. It will be hard to fit it all into the promo. We'll talk about the weekend games, what to look forward to, hot topics in the news. Spin It Old School, which gives a back-in-the-day approach from Chuck. A no-spin zone where Chuck gives an unbiased opinion and lets you do the same. Chuck will be taking us around town and around the world with news, happenings, and more. It's football, news, and happenings. Tune in for Spin It with Chuck Foreman, Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, on the Voice America Sports Channel. Fantasy sports is where the action really is. Over 40 million people play fantasy sports, but rarely do they get to quiz the experts. Fantasy Insights is the name and the game. Tune in every week as Dish Adams and his guests clue you in on the fantasy football game, what's happening on and off the field, and how it will affect your fantasy team. These experts aren't just beat writers assigned to fantasy football. They live and breathe the game. Tune in to Fantasy Insights with Dish Adams every Thursday afternoon at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Sports.
The fans now have a voice to speak their mind. No holds barred.
Take the bitch's ass and then move on.
I just think that the coach made a mistake.
All crazy.
NFL, MLB, NBA, NHL. Speak up.
Speak up.
Or forever hold your mouth.
We ain't playing around here.
Voice America Sports.
You're listening to Pit Pass USA with Larry Henry. To leave comments or suggest future guests for the show, email us at LarryHenry@PitPassUSA.com. That's LarryHenry@PitPassUSA.com. Now back to more of the fastest show in motorsports, Pit Pass USA with Larry Henry.
Had a chance a few days ago to talk to really an icon when it comes to motorsports in America. Great race car driver, innovator, car builder, both in Formula One and, of course, in IndyCar, guy that went on to have a successful team in open wheel and other forms of racing, now working on the Delta Wing project, and that is Dan Gurney. And I wanted to play part of the interview just to give you a little feel for Dan Gurney and also a little history about him, and it was a pleasure talking to Dan Gurney.
Thank you, Larry. Well, nice to be with you.
Let's go to the beginning. How did Dan Gurney get involved in motorsports? You grew up originally in New York, your father a Metropolitan Opera star, and yet here you are in motorsports.
I became fascinated probably when I was about 8 years old, the first time I saw a different kind of motorcycle, not a Harley, and a product of the automobile age, picked up the virus very early, and I still haven't been able to get rid of it.
How big was the move of your family to Riverside, California? Did that really ignite the passion for you?
No, it increased the passion. See, I graduated from high school in Manhasset, Long Island, in 1948. I was 17. I had already sent away for how to do it kind of things from Hot Rod Bill and how you build Ford flatheads. I had a 33 Ford Roadster at the time, and I hung out with guys that had modified cars. And I was definitely involved in the automobile age.
It's amazing that your real racing career started back in 1955, but it did not take you long to be running in Formula One. What all did you do in those years to get to that point where Formula One and Indianapolis were on your horizon?
So I was headed to Indy in 1948, of all things, with my car, and everything was planned, but it was snowing like the dickens early in the year. Maybe it was even late 47, but I managed to get within a few hundred yards of my girlfriend's house and knocked the transmission and the rear end out at the same time, trying to push too much snow with a set of chains on the back. And so when I went to fix it, going to the junkyards, which were like gold mines to us, I got the transmission repaired and fixed and replaced, and then right when I went to fire it up, found out that the rear end was gone also, and it was too late, so I missed going to Indy, and I didn't get back there until 1962. Still, the passion never died down.
And, of course, during that time early on, you wound up going into Formula One, having great battles with the likes of Jimmy Clark, who became your teammate, Stirling Moss, Graham Hill, Jack Brabham, Phil Hill, Jackie Stewart. What were those days like with those iconic names that we think about today in racing?
Well, golly, I just, as a matter of fact, I just had a call this morning from a journalist that was calling from Italy, from Monza, and he said this is the 50th anniversary of Wolfgang von Tripp's dying in the early lap of the Italian Grand Prix Formula One race, and I was in that race, and they knew that, and they wanted to ask a question a little bit like yours. And, of course, going to high school in Long Island, I remember one particular car that always was parked outside the grounds of the high school, and it was a 32 Ford Coupe. And I remember it had enough power to spin the tires, which I had never seen before in those days, and that made a great impression on me. And I was also a very rabid fan of racing at Freeport Stadium in Long Island. I had a favorite race driver named Phil Walters, who raced under the name of Ted Tappet. So I was, every time I could find something new to read about it, why, I got hold of it. And one of the first magazines that came out in the automobile racing industry was called Speed Age. That was right up my alley, so I had lots of dreams and lots of targets for where I wanted to go.
Well, not only were you racing in Formula One, but of course, and maybe a lot of people don't realize this, the Eagle Gurney Westlake V12, highly successful. You went out and won in it.
That was a very special moment, and when we decided to build our own car and we also decided to build our own engine, and that was a double overhead cam V12 four-valve per cylinder, a very modern engine, and I worked with the Westlakes on that, and it was a wonderful time. We had to work awfully hard because we were short on financing, but we made up for it with passion.
You were the man that really put the impetus on going to rear-engine cars at Indianapolis. You were racing in Formula One. You knew Colin Chapman and his brilliance that he had. And you came up with the idea of getting Colin Chapman along with Ford. You brought Mr. Chapman to the Indianapolis 500, I believe it was in 1962, to observe. He did. And next thing you know, you're coming there with the Ford Lotus cars. Talk about how all that came together.
Well, it was, to me, trying to look to the future, the sort of evolution of the rear engine cars, which had already occurred in Europe and into Grand Prix racing. It seemed obvious to me that even though the American front engine roadsters were very, very good and had beaten some of the European stuff on a few occasions when they got the race, it looked like it was inevitable that the mid-engine or rear-engine cars were going to take over if the rules would allow it. And so I decided, hey, if I wanted to be involved and I could have my choice as to who might design one for Indy, why Colin Chapman would be the one. He seemed to be the most prolific and brilliant, innovative designer in those days. So I asked him, can I buy you a round-trip ticket and come to Indy and look it over and see what you think? And actually, I had relationships with Ford Motor Company at the time, and I arranged so they could get together with Chapman. Next thing you know, they said, hey, we're going to go to Indy. That was more or less the way it came about.
I can remember those cars so well at Indianapolis as a young person with my family watching on pole day and watching the sleek Lotus and going, look at those cars. And little did we know at that time that it was actually going to change what the Indianapolis 500 was in the cars. But it wasn't as easy as I think maybe Colin Chapman thought, maybe you thought. I don't know at the time. It took a little while. In fact, 1963, probably Jimmy Clark should have won the Indianapolis 500 because the man in front of him that went on to win, Parnelli Jones, it was one of those days where there was a little oil coming out of the car.
Yeah, we used to call him Parnelli, not Parnelli. And Rufus Parnelli Jones was one terrific driver, and he's a very good friend today. And he was going to be difficult to beat whether he had a rear engine or a front engine car. No one knew at the time how difficult it was going to be. There were lots of things that the Europeans learned from coming to Indy that helped them with their cars in the future over there. And so it wasn't a one-way street. The Indy evolution had a lot of very good aspects to it. A lot of it was aerodynamics. And the Indy track in those days was rough enough so that finishing the 500 was not so easy. Usually the European cars that came there ended up being too fragile, but eventually it all happened.
That's just a portion of the conversation I had with Dan Gurney. It was actually for Racing in America. You can hear the entire interview. There's more of it. I talk about actually the win with Jimmy Clark in 1965 at the Indianapolis 500, which marked the rear engine era. In fact, once he won, no front engine car ever wound up a winner again at Indianapolis. We also talk about the GT40 in 1967, winning the 24-hour Le Mans with A.J. Foyt, Carroll Shelby putting those cars together. The champagne spray, which he started that tradition at 1967 at the 24-hour Le Mans. Talk about the Gurney Eagle, the Indy car that he built and designed and won a couple of Indianapolis 500s with. And also got into the new project he's working on and very excited about. And that, of course, is the Delta Wing car, the LMP1 machine that is being built at the All-American Race Shops out in Santa Ana, California. Ben Bowlby, the car designer, of course, originally this car was designed to run at Indianapolis when they were looking for a new car. It's being modified now for LMP1. It's very exciting. Dan Gurney is really pumped on this car. No engine has been announced yet, but they're hoping to get it on track and start testing in the very near future. And Dan Gurney, even at his age, still going. In fact, I had to delay the interview I did with him by a few weeks because he's involved in a slight motorcycle accident. Of course, he's got, what is it Gator or Alligator? I kind of forget here. Motorcycles. He's always been big on motorcycles. But had a little bit of an injury there, and he's bounced back, and it was great talking with him. But you can hear the entire interview. All you have to do is go to racinginamerica.com, racinginamerica.com. I think you'll find it fascinating, and also you'll find out about Racing in America, which is going to be a great display at the Henry Ford, which is in Dearborn, Michigan. Roger Penske is involved. Jack Roush is involved. There's been a lot of money given. They've got some cars and various items already. But it is going to be fantastic, and it's right across from actually the Ford Racing Proving Grounds, which is at Dearborn and the Glasshouse Ford Motor Company headquarters. But racinginamerica.com, I think you really will enjoy it. And speaking of Indianapolis, did you see what happened with Las Vegas? Of course, it's going to be the final IndyCar race of the season, Las Vegas Motor Speedway. Originally, they were offering $5 million to an outside driver to come in and might win the race. No one really took them up. So now what they have done with GoDaddy, $5 million, $2.5 million to a lucky fan. I forget where the other $2.5 goes. Danny Weldon, the Indianapolis 500 winner, is going to be driving a car. He'll start at the back of the field. If he wins, they split the money and all. I'm not sure it's going to bring any fans in watching. Maybe it'll get some fans signing up. I'm not sure. But they're going to try that, and I'm beginning to wonder, even though I love Danny Weldon to death and known him for, now since he was running in Atlantics a long time ago, why they are pushing him so hard to become the face of IndyCar, I guess, with Danica Patrick leaving. Anyway, that's just something to throw in there. Well, I want to thank all my guests tonight that we have on board. Dustin Long talking a little bit about the chase. Will Power, who's over in Japan or on his way. Also, of course, Adrian Fernandez and what you heard from Dan Gurney. I want to thank you for listening. I'm actually on my way to Laguna Seca to Monterey, California tomorrow morning, bright and early, to go out there for the Great American Le Mans Series weekend. It should be a fun time. Thank you for listening. Don't forget you can always email LarryHenry@PitPassUSA.com. We will do this all again if my airline gets me back home next Wednesday night right here. Pit Pass USA with Larry Henry, part of the Power Motorsports Series at VoiceAmericaSports.com.
For this week, time to get ready for another great week of racing to talk about next time on Pit Pass. Tune in next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, for another fast-paced 200-mile-per-hour edition of Pit Pass USA with Larry Henry on Power Up, your motorsports channel.